Join us as we explore the importance of advocating with today's guest, the Director of Advocacy Engagement for the well-known organization who is committed to supporting policies and initiatives that make a positive impact on the lives of children and adults living with neuromuscular diseases.
Participate, engage, speak out, use your voice to be an effective advocate. The Voices in Advocacy podcast examines the diverse landscape of advocacy, exploring the ins and outs of building influence, driving change, and creating champion advocates. It's now time for the Voices in Advocacy podcast with your host, Roger Rickard.
Welcome to Season 5 of the Voices in Advocacy podcast. I'm Roger Rickard, president and founder of Voices in Advocacy, where we work with organizations to inspire, educate, engage, and activate your supporters by turning them into effective, influential advocates. And this is the podcast dedicated to the art of advocacy. This podcast is for the people that work and engage in advocacy efforts for their organizations, be they corporations, associations, trade organizations, and nonprofit cause groups. Now, let's get started. On today's show, we have the privilege to speak with the Director of Advocacy Engagement for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, Mr. Mark Fisher. Now, in this role, Mark leads MDA's grassroots program and advocacy volunteer efforts. He works to empower advocates and connect them with key decision makers in order to advance public policies that improve the lives of the neuromuscular disease community. He previously served as the digital grassroots manager at the American Heart Association and was also a field organizer on a U.S. Senate campaign. Mark earned his Master of Public Policy from American University and is originally from that great city, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Mark Fisher to today's show. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Roger. Thanks for having me. I like the emphasis on Pittsburgh at the end. It is a great city. So, yes, thank you for having me. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is. It is a great city. And, you know, I still kind of bleed blue and gold or black and gold. I shouldn't say blue. Well, I went to Penn State, so it was blue and white. And so I got the blue and white and the black and gold confused there.
No worries. The city's still split between Penn State and Pitt, so you can straddle the middle just fine.
Yeah, some can. I'm not sure I can.
Okay.
Listen, let's begin with telling your listeners or our listeners who you serve.
Oh, absolutely. So I have the privilege of serving the neuromuscular community. That can be folks living with muscular dystrophies, ALS, or other related neuromuscular diseases. MDA really serves a wide community of folks who do live with neuromuscular disease. It's an honor, it's a privilege, and my role is to really live up to our mission statement, which is to empower the people we serve to live longer, more independent lives. The best way to do that is via advocacy, in my opinion. So the best way is to help change public policy, change rules and regulations to really empower the folks to live longer, more independent lives. So it's an honor every day, and that's what I do.
And I would also probably add the change of the perception of people that are dealing with these issues as well, correct?
Yeah, it's change the perception or a lot of the work we do is shine a light on some of the barriers that the neuromuscular community faces, some of the barriers that the disability community faces. It's just a lot of times the work we do, we hear a lot of, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize. We've been doing a lot of that this year with our air travel campaign. So it's usually the first step is to shine a light on the issues that matter to our community. And then from there, really work to change public policy and regulations to improve the situation.
Yeah. Well, and advocacy education, educating people on what is going on within your community. So you mentioned a little bit about air travel. I wanted to get into what are the most pressing issues facing MDA patients and families and the people you serve?
Yeah, definitely air travel is the biggest one. That we worked on last year in 2023 that we'll continue to work on this year. It's just simple. Flying, if you're a wheelchair user and you have to fly, it's a pure nightmare. There's no way around it. Anything from trying to board a plane. A lot of folks who are wheelchair users, they had to store their wheelchair under the airplane into the cargo hold. So when they have to board a plane, they are physically lifted out of their chair into a very tiny, tiny aisle chair to get onto the plane, then relifted back into their seat. In that process, injuries happen. We've had folks break their arms because they've been dropped by flight crew. And it also, in the end, it's just dehumanizing. It's a dehumanizing experience for many folks. And then once they get to their destination, they hope and pray that their really, really expensive wheelchair that is custom made for them arrives in one piece. And a lot of the times it doesn't. And airlines break these wheelchairs. And for our folks that we serve, these wheelchairs are their legs. And it's like breaking your legs. They literally, that's really how severe it is. So it is a huge issue of ours to change this process to better train air our flight crew, better train the airports, the airlines, and then get to a point where folks can just stay in their wheelchairs on flight. Air travel is the only mode of transportation that is not regulated under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So if you go on Greyhound or Amtrak or more van service or public bus, usually have a better experience because you can lock into your wheelchair. But airlines and airplanes are totally different. So we've been doing a lot of work to shine a light on that process and hopes of changing it. When you're in an airport, most folks, when they hear over the intercom those who need extra time boarding now, most folks are on their phones. They're just not paying attention. But that's the point when folks who are wheelchair users have to get onto a plane. And so folks never see this process because they're not on the airplanes. And then folks who are wheelchair users, they leave the plane last. So they board first, they leave last. Most of the general public has no idea what the process is like. So it is our huge, huge, huge issue that we've been working on for many, many years. And we're hopeful we're going to see monumental progress very early this year.
Well, as someone who averages about 125,000 domestic air miles a year, running around speaking and traveling, I see it all the time, and I fully understand everything that you indicated. It also, in light of the fact that airlines are streamlining a little bit more, smaller airports have less flights available. That means there's a lot more connection flights, and the amount of time that it takes with them being last off and having to be first on, that gap of time that they need in between flights has got to be bigger. I mean, there's all kind of repercussions, as well as I would imagine that the airlines, even if the custom wheelchair has been damaged or broken, are not liable for the full amount of that, only what they have in their carriage agreement in regard to what they'll pay for any type of baggage, correct?
Yeah, they'll pay normally if there's a lot of ifs coming up.
Yeah.
An airline will pay for the damage to a wheelchair if someone makes a report immediately. A lot of times folks won't realize that their wheelchair is broken until maybe they get home and you need to use it more. If the airline agrees to pay for it or they don't try to fight it, and there's a lot of times they'll go back and forth with the customer about paying for these damages that they've caused. They will pay for it, but there's lots of hoops that people have to go through to get this done. And then these airlines contract out with another company to repair the wheelchairs. Well, there's a long waiting list for wheelchair repairs. We have
Wow.
many advocates, one in particular, who will pre-call companies and make them aware of when she is flying because she knows they'll have to have a repair when she lands. I mean, that's how prevalent it is. So it is remarkable. And one thing you said that was really interesting is, the amount of connections and the amount of smaller planes. There are many planes in this country that power wheelchairs literally cannot fit in the cargo hold. Think about your really small commuter jets. If you're flying from DC to New York or DC to Boston, those tiny, tiny jets, the cargo hold doors are not large enough. So some folks who have bigger wheelchairs cannot fly on those routes they have to go to bigger cities and fly another way because the airplanes cannot hold their power wheelchairs in the cargo holds. And that's annoying enough. But how many times have you had a switch of airplanes on you? It's happened to me many, many times. You get to a gate. Oh, we switched aircraft. Sorry, you are now on this version of this airplane. What happens if that airplane is smaller and now they can't fit your air wheelchair in the cargo hold? That happens. And then folks get stranded at airports. I know it's a 20-some-minute podcast, but we could go hours on the issues that we're trying to solve. So it's by far our number one issue, and it's one that we are working diligently to fix. But it's not our only one. We do a lot of advocacy. Air travel has just been one that we've been doing lately.
Yeah, well, and in fact, I mean, even starting if we go back to the beginning of MDA and then the relationship that you originally had with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, and then on with the Jerry Lewis Telethon and everything you did there was empowering people and sharing the stories. So with that, I want to lean into why is advocacy engagement so important?
I'm as you mentioned in the intro, I've been a campaign guy. It's so important. I think for many reasons, and this is nationwide. A lot of folks just don't believe their voice matters. They just don't. There's so much cynicism in this country, and you can say whether it's appropriate or deserved or not, but there's just out there. It's cynicism. It's in my family too. I hear it all the time. My voice doesn't matter and everything. But that's not true. That's absolutely not true. And you know, one thing that any advocacy program and MDAs is in particular, it's really powerful, is we prove that time and time again. It can take one person raising their voice to make a change. You know, it can be that one meeting you have with that right red legislator that will that'll move the needle. And we see it time and time again. Anything from air travel, what we're talking about now, but we've had many, many important wins that might not just make the headlines. Medicare covering standing wheelchairs for folks. That was something that we did in 2023 last year that was a very small rule change in the Medicare program that has had huge help for folks who need that equipment. Amazing. The amount of states that now screen newborns for spinal muscular atrophy or Pompe disease, two of the conditions that we cover, is saving lives every single day. And it with state work, sometimes it's just making that phone call to the right person in the state government to get the needle going. I could go on and on, but advocacy is so important because you can make a difference with one or two people raising their voices. And it happens every year, time and time again.
Yeah. Margaret Mead, the great American cultural anthropologist, said something like, and I may be paraphrasing here, a small group of concerned citizens can make a difference. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a concentrated group of people. And in your case, you use the example of one, but having a couple of people tell the story and tell it the right way with the right facts and all the other attributes that go into great storytelling when it comes to advocacy really does make a difference. So in doing a little bit of research, I found out that MDA has an advocacy institute.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can you provide some insight in how you use that advocacy institute to drive engagement and action?
Definitely. I'm smiling. I don't know if people can see ear to ear on this one. Thank you. Yeah, our advocacy institutes are every month. They're usually towards the end of every month, but sometimes they got to switch based on congressional calendar. And they're educational opportunities for our grassroots advocates. And it's a place where we dive on various issues that we work on. Obviously, air travel, one of them. But we talk about, strengthening disability protections via government agencies. We talk about rights to vote. What are your rights to vote? We talk about, maybe certain bills, certain ALS bills we're working on. We'll do a whole webinar on that. We've done some on grassroots training. It's a wide variety of topics that we do that cover all the issue areas that MDA advocates on. And they're really an opportunity, again, to educate our grassroots advocates about what we're working on, how they can help. And one thing I really like about them is, you know, not only that we are on those webinars, but we bring in other partner organizations that we work with. I mean, so much of the work we do is coalition-based. So we'll bring in speakers from other partner organizations to talk about a main topic or talk about, there might be the expert on this issue. And it just shows our grassroots community, but it shows the, you know, obviously overall that you have to work together with other groups to accomplish big things. So we look forward to them every month. Every month is a fun topic that we like to talk about, but it's purely an educational way to show folks different ways and different issues that they can get involved in and they might not have realized.
And then you do those live and then put them on the website for to make them evergreen so that people can look at them much later, correct?
Yeah. If you go to mda.org/advocacy, you can access our website that way. And we do have them all up there that are still relevant. There are definitely some webinars that we do that are specific for maybe a bill or a big push we're doing. And next thing you know, the bill passed, or maybe it, you know, we need to continue to work on it. So we might take that down but the evergreen content is still up there.
Well, you have one on government shutdown. So you could just, you know, go on and hit replay in January.
You bring up a great point. We talked about when should we take that down, but you know the climate we're in right now, you know, it's they pushed the deadlines back to mid-January where we are right now into somewhere in early February. So you know, it is interesting to see. That one is unfortunately, I'll say this, it's more evergreen than I wish it would have been.
Yeah, well, but, I agree.
You know, but that's the type of topics we talk about. You know, we did because folks don't know, you know, they get their couple minutes of news about what's a government shutdown mean. And you can't explain it in a 2-minute soundbite because everyone, we affect it differently.
Yes.
But let's hope when this airs, this will be a thing. We don't have to worry about it anymore. But yeah, unfortunately, it's a little more evergreen than we had hoped.
What are different ways then that you have your advocates using your grassroots, your champions, to engage with different policymakers? How do you do that?
Oh, it's a huge menu of options. And I'm glad you asked that question. You know, it's a menu. No matter what you're comfortable with doing, we'll have an opportunity for you. So, you know, the first thing is to sign up. You know, that's the first, get your foot in the door, you know, go to mda.org. /advocacy and just sign up, you know, and that way you will get at least our monthly emails and our to let you know how to get involved. But from there, you know, on our website, there'll be specific campaigns you can join, whether it's one on improving air travel that I talked about earlier, or one about reforming the Social Security insurance program out there. And there'll probably be a wide variety as well that you can take action on. And there we will connect you to your lawmaker. So you just type in your address. Our system will automatically know who represents you. We get that all the time. I don't know who represents me. It's okay. Our system will make sure that we connect you with the right person. And then from there, we'll give you a sample message you can send that we encourage you to then customize for yourself. And folks do that a lot. With some of the air travel work, we've seen up to 30 to 40% of our messages have included a personal story, which really, really cuts through the noise on Capitol Hill. So you can always email your members of Congress that way. We definitely have a lot more opportunities for our more advanced advocates as well that want to do just a little bit more. You know, we have a yearly Hill Day that folks have come to. We have we had a virtual Hill Day that folks have come to. We connect them with our main MDA blog. They can write some blog pieces for us. You know, they can even become like a main champion and maybe really develop that relationship with a lawmaker. You know, it's really what you make of it. You can do simple of just emailing your member of Congress, which is great. We love that. But if you want to do more and really develop that relationship, we can foster that as well.
I would imagine your Hill Days are very influential as members see a lot of people running around the Capitol that are in the condition that they're in due to the muscular issues that they have, the neuromuscular issues that they have. Have you had any, can you share a story or impact that happened because of face-to-face, an engagement that happened because of your fly-in?
Oh, absolutely. So in 2023, we did a fly-in around air travel. It won't surprise you. And we brought in 31 advocates, many of them wheelchair users, to come to DC to talk to their members about FAA reauthorization. That's the vehicle we're using to improve air travel. And we selected them from, they lived in key states or key districts, and their members or senators were on key committees. Because at that time, decisions were being made, and we had to ensure we talked to the right people. So we had, I mean, I was involved in a few of them, but we had a couple with Senator Cruz's office, and he is the ranking member on the Senate Commerce Committee, key person for air travel. And we had at least a 40 to 45 minute meeting with him and his staff. His staff was there, his key staff. It was, you know, and that's a long time for a staff member to talk to a member, to a grassroots constituent. So, you know, they told their story about air travel, how it has affected them personally. And that meeting, the one advocate, she decided to fly for the first time in 14 years. Because of how awful air travel was for her. So she made the first flight in 14 years to come talk to Senator Cruz's office. Pretty powerful story. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously he's the ranking member on this committee. So it's key to get him on board. And I will safe to say their office was pretty much on board with the ask that we had for them that day.
Excellent.
You know, yeah, I was in a meeting and with in J.D. Vance's office and Sherrod Brown's office with some of the advocates I went around with. And, you know, when an advocate says to a member of Congress or their staff that, hey, I haven't flown in so many years because the last time I was dropped and I broke my arm, that is extremely powerful. And you can see in the staff members' faces or the member of Congress said like, oh, this is not a normal meeting. This is not a normal constituent meeting. You can just tell their face does a little look like, oh, and they start to pay attention more. They start to ask more questions than they might normally do. So when you lock up that personal story with the ask, it's extremely powerful. And we saw that time and time again last year.
Great. Great examples. Thanks for sharing those. Do you have any advocacy training programs where you train your members to be even like more effective and influential? And, you know, how do you tell your story? What is the makeup of a meeting when you're meeting with a policymaker? What do you do in that area?
Yeah, and it's a good question. It's something we're evolving into. So it's kind of a two-parter answer on that. So obviously, before any of our Hill days, whether it's in person or virtual, we have an extensive training program for them for anyone who is attending to know what the heck is a meeting like. You know, I've never met with my member of Congress before. I think folks don't know what to expect. So they give them the 1, 2, 3 of how this is going to go and letting them know the most important part is you in your story. This is why we brought you there. I can go to the Capitol Hill all day, all night, give them any piece of paper I want with any fact, but I'm not going to be as powerful as a constituent with a compelling story. And that's the thing that we share time and time again is your story is what is the most influential part of this meeting, and you're the expert on it. That usually calms folks down a bit. So we will have that extensive training before any major event. I'd say, you know, in 2024, we are seriously ramping up our key contact program and our key contact or grass tops program, whatever you want to call it, sure, to really build a more substantial network of folks who really want to do more. They really want to have that connection with the lawmaker. They want to know who that district office manager is. They want to know who the district director is. You know, they want to know who the scheduler is, that type of advocate. We all know who those advocates are, and we have them, and we're going to really build up that program to be more extensive training. It's kind of the next evolution of our advocacy program.
Excellent. Excellent. Just a couple more quick questions. What is the first word that comes to mind when you think of the word advocacy?
Empowerment. There's no doubt. It's always empowerment. It's always, you know, in this role at the Muscular Dystrophy Association, I see it time and time again of folks who just, they're in this, I think America in general doesn't know the power they have with their elected officials. It's more than they think. And, you know, and in my previous role at the American Heart Association, the same thing. We had advocates who just weren't sure how to use their voice. That is all my role is. And when you boil it down, My role is to have our advocates be able to use the voice they already have in an empowering way. And when you can get unlock that, it's super powerful. So empowerment, without a doubt, is the number one word I think of with advocacy.
Well, and the fact that you keep bringing voice up over and over again, and we're on the Voices and Advocacy podcast.
Yeah, seems super appropriate.
Well played, Mark. Well played. and you're absolutely right. There are a ton of misconceptions out there that people don't have a voice. I think that's one of the things that first timers that participate all often walk away with. I was shocked how much they paid attention. I was shocked how much they knew or how much they cared or how diligently they took notes and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So,
yeah, in the end, most members of Congress still want to help out their constituents. You know, it's so true. And, you know, most of them really are there for really good intentions. Almost all of them are. They really want to help the folks in their community, or they wouldn't have tried this to be elected in the first place. So it's definitely one of those things that you still have to counteract to get, but their voice is so important and their members want to hear it.
What are the biggest rewards in your job?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. You know, I think I'll say the biggest rewards of my job is when we have volunteers who come to me and say, like, you opened my eyes and allowed me to build confidence in myself that I didn't have. Wow. And that has happened many, many times with me, not only this role at the Muscular Dystrophy Association, because it definitely has, but my previous role at the American Heart Association, when I was on that Senate campaign all those years ago working with volunteers. You know, a lot of folks come after they go to any of the events that we do and just say, you know, I've built my confidence up. I want to do more now. I want to speak up more. What else can I do? It's just so rewarding. It's so rewarding. When you hear someone say that to you, it warms your heart. It really does. Because, again, I think folks don't think their voice matters to their government, and it does. And when you can tell them it does, it just makes you feel good.
And then when they do it and you've proved it, that even that ties it all together in a nice big bow.
Definitely.
What is the best professional tip you've ever received in your career?
Oh, the best professional tip, I believe this is him. It was Ira Glass, a famous podcaster and host, said, I was listening to one of his podcasts. I think it was This American Life, actually. And he said, it wasn't to me, it was just to the audience in general. He said, when you first start out, the first things you produce are terrible. It doesn't matter if it's written, speaking, anything that you try to do, the first couple things you do are going to be awful. And he said, don't let it get you down. Keep going, and eventually you will perfect your craft. And, you know, I'll say when I first started, I you know, years and years ago at other organizations, I didn't know what I was really doing. And I could tell that what I was doing wasn't working, and I was getting really, really frustrated. But I kept thinking about that. And the more you do what you do, the better you'll get. And that applies to any industry, I think. So I always think about that, what he said is, you know, the first things you do are not going to be great. Keep working at it, and you'll start to improve.
I think that is solid, sound advice. Mark, any final thoughts? Anything you would like to add today?
Oh, that's I've never been asked that before. I think just, you know, I can't be a good grassroots organizer advocate if I don't plug our network one more time. If anything I talked about, you know, improving air travel, but anything that we do, whether it's increasing screening for newborns, whether it's increasing access to healthcare in general for many Americans, any of our disability work, if any of that interests you, please give us a look. You just have to go to mda.org/advocacy, and that's all you need to do. But other than that, no, I think I've really enjoyed this conversation, Roger. Thank you.
Well, Mark, I enjoyed it as well, and I'm glad that you're plugging MDA. I have always believed in it, and I've followed it for many, many years. I'm glad we had the opportunity to connect with this, and I thank you very much. And that is a wrap-up of today's engaging conversation with Mark Fisher, Director of Advocacy Engagement for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Mark, thank you for being on the show, and all the best.
Thank you, Roger.
Let's face it, today's advocacy arena is just plain noisy. Organizations are stretched. You need every advantage to make sure your issue gets the attention it deserves and your voice heard. The RAP Index is the best way to do just that by finding your stakeholders' relationships and engagement power. Get past the noise. Know who your people know. Go to rapindex.com. That's rapindex.com, and tell them Roger sent you for a special offer. If you like today's podcast, head over to where you find your podcasts and subscribe to the Voices in Advocacy podcast. A big thank you to today's guest. I appreciate your time and the unwavering passion for advocacy you have. Well, that's it for this episode of Voices in Advocacy. Remember, you have the power to be an effective, influential advocate. Now go out and make it a better world.
We hope you enjoyed today's Voices in Advocacy podcast and look forward to you joining us again next week. To learn more about Voices in Advocacy, go to our website, voicesinadvocacy.com.